Upfront, inside Atlanta's entertainment industry, is brought to you by Atlanta's Jazz Station, 91.9 FM, WCLK.
Coming up on this week's show, Upfront talks exclusively to NAACP Image Award-nominated singer-songwriter Major. The Billboard chart-topping vocalist was in Atlanta recently as part of Kirk Franklin and Ledisi's The Rebel, The Soul, and The Saint tour. He opens up about his newest single, Honest, as well as his Soul Train Awards performance and much more. Filmmakers Wendy Ely Jackson and Maynard H. Jackson III are in the studio to chat about their highly anticipated independent film, Maynard. It chronicles the life of Atlanta's first black mayor and iconic figure, Maynard Jackson. The film also features appearances by President Bill Clinton, Reverend Jesse Jackson, and is directed by Sam Pollard. I'll also be playing music from Jasmia Horn and Billy Childs, who both picked up Grammy Award nominations this week. But first, here's casting buzz and entertainment news with Reva Blue.
All right, Mr. DeMille, I'm ready for my close-up.
Extras Casting Atlanta is looking for men and women between the ages of 18 to 30 years old for a super hot club crowd scene. Filming for the scene will take place the first and second week of December. If you think you have what it takes, then email a recent photo and all of your contact information to shaftextras@gmail.com with the word club in the subject line of the email. Extras Casting Atlanta is also looking for men and women of all types to portray homeless people and drug addicts for a small street scene. If this is you, please submit a recent photo and all your contact information to shaftextras@gmail.com with the word street in the subject line of the email. In other related entertainment news, the Grammy Award nominations were announced this week and a number of our favorite artists received nominations, including Jasmia Horn, Raul Midon, Cecile McLaughlin, Lauren Salvant, The Baylor Project, and The Randy Porter Trio for Best Jazz Vocal Album. Go to WCLK.com to see the full list of nominees, including Best Jazz Instrumental Album and Best Large Jazz Ensemble Album, and more. That's this week's entertainment news and casting buzz. I'm Reva Blue. Programming on WCLK is made possible in part by support from AEG Presents Southeast, presenting the Kumasi Washington North American Tour Night in Atlanta, Friday, December 8th at the Variety Playhouse. It's an evening of progressive, improvisational, and bebop as saxophonist Kumasi Washington brings his North American Tour to Atlanta. Ticket information is available at Variety-Playhouse.com.
This is Lisa Arendelle, and you're listening to Ray Cornelius on Upfront.
Up above my head, I hear music in the air. Up above my head, there's a melody so bright and fair. I can hear when I'm on.
Atlanta was as segregated as any small town in the South. Totally segregated society.
Maynard Jackson came at a time that we were going from just protest to political power.
Citizens of Atlanta elected a man they thought could best do the job as mayor.
I will be governor.
He was born to be great.
By what is my conviction?
He was taught to be great.
He's the city's first black mayor. His name is Maynard Jackson.
So help me God.
Congratulations, Mr. Mayor.
Atlanta was the capital of the South. For him to win and really call shots, it was huge.
He helped to build Atlanta into the great city it is today.
Today's victory
and it is a victory.
You just heard a clip from the newly released trailer for the upcoming documentary film, Maynard. It chronicles Maynard Jackson's rise to political power as the first African-American mayor of a major southern city and features commentary from those who knew him best, including Reverend Al Sharpton, Ambassador Andrew Young, President Bill Clinton, Reverend Jesse Jackson, and former Atlanta Mayor Shirley Franklin. The film is directed by award winner Sam Pollard and is executive produced by my first guests, rising filmmakers Wendy Ely Jackson and Maynard H. Jackson III. The two stopped by the Upfront Studios this week to chat about the film and Maynard's enduring legacy.
Well, good morning, guys, and welcome to Upfront. How are you?
Well, very well. Thanks for having us. Great.
This is an honor having you guys here in the studio. It's been a long time coming. We've been wanting to talk about this film for quite some time, and I think we're ready to officially talk about Maynard, the movie.
Absolutely.
I got to tell this very quick story. I've been in Atlanta for 20 years now. And I remember seeing your dad walking down Forsyth Street. We were right in front of the Rialto Center. And I had this celebrity moment because I just so remember seeing him in history books and reading about him and learning about him. And I always freak out whenever I see people from books in person and in real life. So it was one of those moments where I looked up and it was like, oh, my God. Like, do you guys see who this is? This is the Maynard Jackson. Like, I had been living in Atlanta, I think, maybe about 5 years at that point, mm-hmm. and had never seen him in person. And so to just kind of be walking down the street and seeing him, it was just like, wow. It was like he wasn't real. I was like, oh, my God, this guy actually exists. Like, he's standing right there.
He was very personable.
Yeah.
And so that angle is something that I've always made an effort to try to step outside of myself and see from someone else's point of view, because he's just dad to me. He was a looming figure, obviously, but as I got older, I started to really see the true impact that he had on people.
Yeah,
and a deep inset, like impact that I started to recognize, and so it made me kind of step outside of myself and say, wow, he's
more than dad.
Right, yeah exactly.
So let's talk about this. This is a story that's been in the making for quite some time now. Why now? Why are we wanting to tell Maynard's story right now?
Well, I think the timing, and to quote Reverend Gerald Durley, it's definitely a Kairos moment. This was Maynard III's idea. And really, it wasn't January 2015. He thought about it in December of 2014. But the implementation of it began in January of 2015. And not just Atlanta. Atlanta's always been, it's probably one of the most progressive urban cities of the 20th and 21st century. And a lot has changed, not just for African Americans, but for our nation as a whole. So, sometimes things don't happen when you want them to happen. But we do recognize that this film is right on time.
Yeah. Now, it's being directed by Sam Pollard. Who has done amazing, amazing work for a number of decades now. What was the deciding factor in saying, hey, we're going to go with this guy?
It really just organically kind of came to us. Wendy mentioned the Kairos moment that Reverend Durley would always speak of, and things have really kind of come together like that. I think it was a Kairos moment when I woke up and said to myself, we should do a, I almost shook her out of her sleep. And I was thinking, we need to do a story about my dad. It's just a combination that her already being in the industry and the fact that his story needed to be told. I think God just kind of set it on my heart. But to your question, how Sam, Winston Sinclair, who you know.
Yeah. And she's been on the show.
Right. She's part of that whole Spike Lee crew. So she mentioned that we might want to consider Sam, and long story short, here we are.
Yeah. Now, the film includes some exclusive interviews with President Bill Clinton, Reverend Jesse Jackson. You've got Al Sharpton. You've got former mayors Shirley Franklin and our current mayor.
Living mayors. Sam Cassell, Andrew Young, Bill Campbell,
right,
Kasim Reed, and Shirley Franklin.
Yeah. So in pulling those stories together, what was it like? You know, just I'm sure they had tons and tons of stories that they could tell. But what was it like, I guess, finding the right story of theirs to tell and put in the film?
Well, you know, that's one of the things that you it's really important that you choose a great director. Being from Atlanta, you can kind of look at Atlanta kind of like a bubble. So there are a lot of stories that Native Atlantans and those would remember very fond memories of Maynard wanted to tell. So, you know, one of the things that Sam brought to the table, he's lived through the civil rights movement. He remembered Maynard. He remembered when people like Tom Bradley was becoming mayor, Maynard, Carl Stokes. So to get the information that that Sam felt like we needed to craft to talk about Maynard, we needed to tell or introduce the man of Maynard. You know, iconically, you know who he is. If you live in Atlanta, you definitely feel the direct impact. If you live elsewhere, you feel the aftershock of what he was able to accomplish. But to tell that story, you know, one of the things Sam already kind of had were questions. He had done a lot of research. He was able to speak to people like Pulitzer Prize winner Doug Blackman, he had worked with on Slavery by Another Name. He had spoken and read Where Peachtree Meets Sweet Auburn by Gary Pomerantz to be able to pull some things. So based on all of those, a lot of different factors, we were able to pull together a really good story.
Yeah.
And lots of his friends.
Yeah.
One of Sam's tactics, I think I could say, is he would try, you know, with so many stories that need to be told. I mean, the things he would do is try to not have the same story
told repeatedly.
So yeah.
If there was like, you know, say 20 people and five of them are kind of the same circle, well, you pick one from each circle so right. You don't have.
Yeah.
Go
ahead.
I mean, we interviewed 43 people.
Oh, wow.
43 people didn't make the documentary, but 43 people were able to contribute stories to help shape what was going to be told.
Yeah. Now, what's been the hardest part of putting this together? Because you're going through various photos, video footage, personal accounts. What's been the hardest part of putting all of this together?
Raising the money to do it. Raising the money to do it. You know, I guess in terms of, we just got back from Doc NYC and hearing some other filmmakers that have been working on their docs for like 5 to 7 years. Technically speaking, it only took us 2 years and 10 months. So I guess it's pretty fast.
Right.
But because Maynard had such a wonderful impact on so many people, and up to presidents of the United States, you know, getting them to do an interview was not hard. You know, getting them scheduled was hard.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like trying to shoot an arrow at a moving target.
Yeah.
While you're on a train and, you know, moving in two different directions. But, yeah. You know, we did the scheduling ourselves. Bunny Jackson Ransom, my mother-in-law, Maynard's first wife. We were able to pull the schedules together and knock it out.
Yeah.
Right. Now, first class, my mother's PR company was kind of like the engine, the administrative engine behind the effort. Yeah.
Now, this also features music by Phil Davis. So what was it like bringing him in? And how did he, I guess, pull this together? Because a lot of times when you talk to individuals and they're putting a soundtrack to a film, a lot of times they may pull from maybe a certain event or maybe something that was kind of personal to the subject matter. So how did he kind of pull the music together for this?
I may have a different opinion. But you being a musician, and he's got 5 songs on there. So
okay.
Well, you know, I knew film. I mean, film was something that Phil had not done yet. But I knew the musicianship was there, and you know, an extreme way with Phil Davis, you know. We brought Sam. We brought Sam Pollard down to kind of let him lay eyes on him, as they say back in the old school, and let them kind of get the vision, you know, squared away.
This one, let me say this.
Okay.
Because Maynard the Third is a musician, because we are, you know, we grew up in the hip hop community of Atlanta. I mean, you had a lot of people that wanted to do the music for this. Mm. Some, you know, Grammy award winning persons. But the one thing that Sam was able to instruct was that a score is not creating a song. A score creates an emotion. Okay. So if you've ever seen the documentary called The Score, which is on iTunes now, what you learn is that a score of a music causes it. It's what evokes emotion. Even if there's a weak portion of a story, a score can breathe life into it. And it was the one thing I loved the most about Phil. If he created something and Sam didn't like and say, nope, that's not it. He never gave up. Nope, that's not it. And then he created a score and we sent it to Sam and Sam said, that's our theme.
Yeah.
That's Maynard.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it wasn't easy for any of the people that thought that they could do it, you know, and, you know, you do have to, I will say this, because you have so many accomplished people, it's a challenge for them, for somebody, you know, like Sam to say, well, no, that's not it. That's not what we're looking for this.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people just send in songs and great songs, but...
That's not a score.
Yeah.
Not a score. And I will say this. He's been nominated for 2 Academy Awards, right? But he's worked on more than 2 Academy Award winning films.
Right.
Right? So when you've been in the game as long as he has, and he's won 6 primetime Emmys, 6 primetime Emmys. We're not talking about regional Emmys. We're talking about 6 primetime Emmys. And he's the recipient and winner of 4 Peabody Awards. He's been around. You know, His resume is long. Got a chance to kind of see how people respond to him in New York. And, you know, people of all creeds, colors, and genders love.
Yeah, he's like the
Sam Godfather. Pollard. He's truly the godfather of New York. NYC belongs to Sam Pollard, just in case folks didn't know. It truly does. But he's a genius. He taught in every situation he was teaching. So for Phil, I'm so proud of him.
He knocked it out of the ballpark.
Yeah. He gave it its best, and that bleeds through.
Yeah. And another thing that's great about, well, like what you alluded to, I mean, what you said about just being able to kind of come back to the huddle and say, okay, you know, and kind of just take a fresh look is something that everyone should strive to do.
Yeah.
In kind of crafting your own voice and anything. I've always from the onset I've been so excited about doing the music for this project, you know. For me to find that really, really good fit, and just like I just kind of the more I thought about Phil doing it, I was like, okay, yeah, this could work. And it's been great. And we also formed like a little band, because we were going to use like some Jimi Hendrix tunes.
Jimi Hendrix costs a lot of money.
Looking at the publishing, we're like, oh,
yeah,
let's rethink this. So it's like, ding, ding, I'm a drummer. You know, I know a guitar player, bass player. I called John Roberts, the bass player, and my friend Eddie plays guitar. And we came up with something that along the vibes, kind of like 70s rock, funk thing, you know.
Yeah.
And then we took our instruments over to Phil's, you know, Phil's set it up, you know, mic'd everything up, and we ran that idea. It was really fun, the whole process. And and then it's just, it was just incredible to see it come together. Also, Bone Crusher came through and did the vocals.
I have to say, Bone Crusher was my idea.
Shout out to Bone Crusher for crushing the track.
Absolutely. Thank you, Bone Crusher.
Yeah, wow.
Well, let me say this. The opening segment is where rock and roll meets hip hop. Okay. It's a blend. It's a perfect blend of that. Somebody can write a book on it later.
Thank you, Wendy and Maynard. We'll be hearing more from them. But first, singer Major was in Atlanta recently as part of the Rebel, the Soul, and the Saint tour featuring Kirk Franklin and Ledisi. Up Front caught up with the rising star to chat about working with these two giants of music and some of the lessons he's learned along the way.
Firstly, Kirk has been a musical and faith inspiration for, like, most of my life. That was actually the first concert I ever went to, was a Kirk Franklin concert in middle school. And I remember being in the audience and looking up there and saying, I'm going to sing with him one day. I'm going to share a stage with him one day. And for this to be full circle where I'm actually opening up and then, you know, sharing moments with him on the stage is surreal to me. But both Ledisi and Kirk, they own their lanes. They own it unashamedly, you know, like without regret, without apology. They just do them. And that's been the greatest, you know, inspiration and motivation just to take full charge of who I am as Major. I'm an expression that, you know, expresses from soul to faith. And people are embracing that. You know, there was a time when they're like, don't bring that into mainstream music. You know, if you're going to talk about God, stay over in gospel. But now I'm able just to be completely me. So timing is everything, man. You know, and being on that tour has just shown me the beauty and the power of just being.
Major has been burning up the Billboard charts with his romantic ballad, Why I Love You, and his most recent single, Honest, which earned him an NAACP Image Award nomination.
I just want to be honest. I just want to be honest. With all my thoughts around, I may let you down. I just want to be honest. Oh, 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 honest. Can't do it without you. Don't want to let you down. No.
I'm back on the charts, man. It's pretty amazing. I'm super grateful. I'm grateful for the love and the support of new and old fans. It's just, it's so surreal because I saw myself here, but the way that it's unfolding is even sweeter than what I saw. And so it's just... It's exciting. It's exciting that there's another embrace, yet an even tighter embrace for what it is that I have to share. Honest is basically the why to why I love you. You know, if you start with presenting and giving your true self before you jump into that relationship, if you tell them this is who I am, sometimes I'm flawed, sometimes I get it wrong, but you're willing to love me through that, then this is why I love you.
In addition to touring with Kirk and Ledisi, Major also appeared on stage with them during the recent Soul Train Music Awards, which was held in Las Vegas. He was completely over the moon about appearing on the show for the second year in a row.
All of this is full circle because our last interview was exactly a year ago. Exactly a year ago, I was on Soul Train as well. And man, this year, to walk into the building, to be embraced by the people of BET was, and the way that they embraced me, like, you've been here, man. We love you. We thank you for being here. It meant so much to me. Connie Orlando, who's now one of the leads in this thing, just embraced me and told me, if there's anything that we can do for you, Major, just let us know. We love you here at BET. That meant so much. And then to get on stage to share it with a musical hero, Kirk Franklin, be beside a beast, a vocal beast, Leandria, Ledisi, and my brother Daniel Caesar. It's going to be a set, man, that stays with me for a long time. That memory is going to stay with me for a long time. This stuff is just blowing my mind, and I'm just going along for the ride.
Christmas!
That was Major performing his holiday tune, Spend Christmas With You. He re-released the song last month and was excited about its timeless message of love and joy.
Spend Christmas With You. I'm super excited because last year it was released just before Christmas. So it lived a little, but it didn't get a lot of room to breathe. And so radio has already said, of course, you know, with the success of Why I Love You, which, by the way, cracked 30 million.
Yeah, I was gonna ask
listen. So we'll get there. But I think because it's already been a proven success that, you know, the Spend Christmas With You has, you know, just easily been more embraced. All my new stuff, people are just like, of course we'll listen. Of course we'll give it a shot. And radio's already got it queued up in some premiere spots. So I'm excited. I can't wait to... I can't wait for the people to hear it. It's real cool. You're probably hearing it right now. Like, it's some good stuff.
Thank you, Major, for that exclusive interview. And congrats once again on your NAACP Image Award nomination.
Celebrate Christmas and the holiday season with your favorite jazz station, Jazz 91.9 WCLK. Come one, come all, and have a sizzling, jazzy good time with the Jazz 91.9 family of faithful friends, valuable volunteers, merry members, and loyal listeners. It's the season to cheer and say thanks. The Jazz 91.9 WCLK Jazzy Celebration is happening on Tuesday, December 5th at Sweet Food Lounge, beginning at 6:30 p.m. featuring one of Atlanta's hottest bands, Papa's People, and other musical guest surprises. Tickets $20 at the door for a festive fun time of music, dancing, and a toast for the holidays. Help us celebrate Christmas and the holiday season at Sweet Food Lounge, Tuesday, December 5th.
Hey y'all, what's going on? It's your boy Devon Franklin, author of the new book, The Hollywood Commandments, and you're listening to Upfront with your boy Ray Cornelius. Stay right here.
Now I'm going to start off by asking your complete attention to this because we have a great potential here. The background is that Georgia has a thriving $300 million film and television industry. And we are well on our way to becoming the third largest entertainment center in the United States. Our goal is to stimulate jobs and to stimulate economic development in Atlanta. In addition, we believe this can have a positive cultural effect on the quality of life in our city. And therefore, I'm pleased this morning to announce that we are encouraged by Atlanta's burgeoning entertainment sector and the potential economic benefits for the city of Atlanta, to the point that we now announce the establishment of the Mayor's Commission on the Atlanta entertainment industry.
So that was a very historic clip. 1992, I believe, was the year for that, and your dad was instituting the Film Commission Department. He pretty much kind of laid the groundwork for a lot of what we're experiencing today living here in Atlanta with all of the television and film productions that are taking place. I think I listened to a report the other day, and it said that we have had over 300 productions, TV and film productions, take place in this year alone. So
right.
When you hear that, what goes through your mind? I mean, he really was a forerunner in seeing Atlanta being this entertainment capital of the South.
Visionary.
Yeah, it was beyond a visionary, but Maynard was indeed, you know, people use the term bright. He could see beyond the curve. You have times where there are people that institute things that can see beyond the curve. Mark Zuckerberg could see beyond the curve. A friend of ours, James Andrews, who has done a lot of media impact things for social media. He sees beyond the curve. Maynard could see beyond the curve. He understood economic development and how that would impact the city of Atlanta as well as Georgia. And it's one of those other things. You know, he created the Bureau of Cultural Affairs. For those of you that don't know, you have your big music festivals in Atlanta as a result of the Bureau of Cultural Affairs.
Jazz Festival.
Jazz Festival, right. Yeah. And the very first person that he put in that position actually was Shirley Franklin before Camille Russell Love. So it's just he's a visionary.
Yeah.
But he's I personally believe after I have read just about every article written about Maynard from 1961 forward. I've digested probably close to 600 articles from beginning to end. I've read Where Peachtree Meets Sweet Auburn a million times. I will say this. He was a man appointed divinely for his time. And the mark that he left, the reason why he still resonates now in the hearts of the people here and elsewhere, is because he was able to see beyond a time that he would even enjoy. So
wow. Now, you mentioned that you guys just premiered at the Documentary Film Festival, better known as DOC in NYC.
Mm-hmm.
And so what was the reception like there? Because I've read, like you said, reading articles and good reviews, but I want to hear from you guys. What was that reception like for the film?
Incredible. Incredible. So Doc NYC is America's largest and most prestigious film festivals for documentaries. Its organizer and programmer, founder, Tom Powers, who's also the programmer for Toronto International Film Festival.
Okay.
We sold it out. We only had one screening. It was closing night, but it was not the closing night film. Okay, so that means we were going up against Eric Clapton's documentary. We sold out in less than a week. They graciously added an additional screening. It was held at the IFC Center, which is down in SoHo. So Doc NYC utilizes three theaters, and the reception was huge.
You almost we practically sold out the second screening as well.
Right.
90% sold out. So it was a packed house.
It was a packed house. Yeah.
So what's next? Where are you guys going next? I mean, what's
we're going to do the film festival circuit. Domestically and abroad. We've been, you know, we have you mentioned some of the other producers. Another producer that you don't know, she's not based here, is Dolly Turner.
Okay.
Dolly, she sits on the board of the Black House Foundation. She's probably been doing film festivals longer than all of us. She used to be the head of sponsorship even for the American Black Film Festival. Jeff Variety's down in Miami. So she strategically has kind of we've come up with a plan of how we want to do things, where Maynard can make its greatest impact. It's a very niche film. So if you read the Hollywood Reporter, it tells you it's equally as moving as it is educational.
Mm-hmm.
There's the film festival circuit. There will be a very, very limited theatrical release, of course, and then you have it'll be on television and streaming and things of that nature. But the big thing that we're really looking for is our educational curriculum that's being created to accompany the documentary. And that's where we're crafting a curriculum that can be put in every school system around the nation, not just a part of it, the Atlanta history, but as American history, so people can truly understand economic development. It should be studied. I think it is being studied at Boston University of what Maynard was able to do. And then we have an outreach and marketing component, which Maynard founded the American Voters League, which after he passed away, it closed. But Maynard III revived it and relaunched it. It has a governing board, and the whole mission and aims of that is to increase voter turnout. It's not voter registration, but it is voter education and turnout. So our outreach and mission to the world is to how do we get people to vote at every election and not just presidential elections, but understanding that your vote matters and it counts.
Yeah. Got to ask you, do you think Maynard would be proud of the city that Atlanta has become today?
I'm going to let Maynard start the answer on that.
The other night we had a joke. We were saying that Maynard must be jumping around. You know, they say folks turn in the grave. They say he must be jumping and dancing. Just kind of making light of just the whole climate, the situation. I think from the onset, it was I won't say doomed, but predestined to be, just say, a bit of a sticky situation with so many people coming from the same circle. So, you know, it's just, it's an interesting thing to see unwind. Would my dad have been proud? I think he'd be proud of the growth you see in the city. He would also be very critical of making sure that, you know, we don't overlook our own. So I'd say proud yet critical, you know, in certain areas.
I think that Maynard would be proud of Atlanta. You know, he passed in 2003. We're in 2017, so it's 14 years. But Atlanta has continued to grow. People have continued to prosper. But I think he would, in agreeing with Maynard, said, I think he'd want to make sure that everybody continued to have a seat at the table. I think maybe the thing that he would be saddened about is the division. But Al Sharpton said something at Doc NYC, and he said, we did a Q&A panel after the first screening, and the time that we live in, he said, we've done this before. What we're going through now pales into comparison to the times of the 60s, right? So we can get through. We can get through this.
Right. He said if Maynard Jackson had to deal with Talmadge.
Right. If he can deal with Herman Talmadge, we can deal with Trump. and so I think we've got, something has to happen because the city to a large degree has been polarized. And that's not who Atlanta has been for the last 100 years. If people don't know even the history of John Wesley Dobbs, Maynard's grandfather, and how William Hartsville worked together to create a progressive city. That's the mindset that we have to make sure is always being implemented to move the city forward. So,
all right. Well, guys, thank you so much for stopping by up front. Again, we're talking to Wendy Ely Jackson, as well as Maynard H. Jackson III, executive producers of the new film Maynard, which is about our beloved Maynard Jackson, who was the first Black or African-American mayor of a major metropolitan city in the South, and definitely a film that we are excited about here at Upfront. Thank you guys so much for stopping by.
Thank you for having us.
In the spirit of Maynard, get out there and vote.
Thank you so much for listening to today's show. I'd really like to thank all of my special guests, Major, Wendy Ely Jackson, and Maynard H. Jackson III. I would also like to thank my engineer, Mark Angel, and you. Please join us next Saturday, December 9th at 9 a.m. for another exciting edition of Upfront, Inside Atlanta's Entertainment Industry. Happy Saturday, Atlanta. If you like today's show, please hit us up at WCLK.com. We'd love to hear from you.
Upfront, Inside Atlanta's Entertainment Industry has been brought to you by Atlanta's Jazz Station, 91.9 FM, WCLK, an NPR member-supported station.